What I've been suggesting over the last 2 days is that life in the United States is the kind of life that cannot be universalized, that cannot be embodied with the 4+ billion people around the world and the 15, 16 billion have by 2000 or 2025 or some year, that the life in our cities and the life generally suggests that there's something more than the human condition that is at stake in the American way of life. And according to my analysis, what the issue is actually the substance of the American way of life, and that the next 200 years will see a shift in the substance, a shift in the meaning structure, a shift in the way in which we relate to each other, a shift in our conception of what is worth doing, and therefore what the church will be doing in the next 200 years is to try to find a new way of being. What the church is doing for the most part now, when it's really effective, is to free people to function in terms of the values of the American culture. When it's really effective, it gives people a kind of freedom. I remember Joe Sittler saying that his brother was a doctor, and he was the only doctor who slept at night. He didn't feel he was justified by being perfect, and since doctors always kill people somewhere in their lives by virtue of making a wrong prognosis or something, he was the only doctor who had a kind of freedom actually to attend to his patients without a great deal of anxiety about making mistakes. So he made fewer mistakes, really, in a sense. What the faith did was kind of free him to function in the system much better than other doctors, or so one might presume. And so where faith has been effective, it seems to me, what it's done is free one to really attend to the goals of the American culture. And that's great. That's to say, it is great if one is free from having to justify himself by doing anything. It is free if one really believes that somehow he is a part of an agency greater than himself, and is simply the instrument of God. That kind of freedom that comes with grace is very difficult in the American culture, since everything in the American culture tends to justify us by what we are. Even in our churches, I frequently say, if you want to hear the words of justification by grace, by God's action and not by yours, it's very difficult in a church where everybody wears a tie, and where you feel really left out if you don't wear a tie and a certain kind of clothing and have a certain kind of way of doing things. And if you go to a church banquet, you have certain kinds of manners, you know, certain kinds of ways you eat and other things. It's very difficult unless somehow in that church are people of different races, different cultures, different standards, some with beards, some not with beards, some with suits on, some with overalls, and somehow everybody is accepted and welcomed and talked to and appreciated in spite of all those externals. Very difficult to preach in that church. Now, God can do anything, so the word can be heard, and it is heard in spite of that, thanks be to God. But in our culture, then, we have a justification by works, and we have a focus upon the individual and the individual career. What I'm saying then, this is the context for the discussion this morning of the shape of the new church, or somehow the kinds of principles that I see emerging in the new church in which I'm involved in helping to nurture. The context for that is the notion that God is the fundamental agency for the creation of what is good. Men cooperate. Men cooperate. Women cooperate. People cooperate. But the Creator is the source in the beginning, in the present, and in our future in terms of our ultimate fulfillment. The Creator is the source. That's quite un-American. We believe that we are the source. Actually, we believe that I believe generally that I am the source. I believe I can create something here almost. And you try to create some great event here at Holden as over against somehow trying to create some conditions in which God may be active. So the great dichotomy is whether it's God or whether it's I who is doing the creative activity. Somehow they go together. The other context is the context of the one or the many, as to whether it's I or we. And it seems to me our culture has held up the one, the I. Everything becomes focused upon what we have done. Scholarship, everything, is a very individual matter. I've been trying for years to get some cooperative scholarship. It's not very easy, and here, there, you get it. And some groups have actually met for several years together and tried to work together as over against it being what one individual can do. And of course, people are always a little bit leery because they're afraid somebody will steal one of their ideas and write a book before they get the idea and get all the credit or make the invention or do anything else, because everything is focused upon what an individual does. And if you look at the stories of the Nobel Prize winners and you see how dependent they were upon other suggestions from other people, but they get the Nobel Prize, and the people who somehow didn't make the final breakthrough don't get credit. It makes all the difference in the world. So it's the one in the many. And I come out of 1 Corinthians 12 on that, and I'm just going to stop to read that because I think sometimes it just gets to be my rambling, and we don't kind of hear that my rambling comes out of years and years and years of attention to certain kinds of Christian history and certain kinds of attention. And you know, we are created in ways we don't know by what we are. I always say I grew up a Methodist and I'm still a Methodist. Those hymns, bright in the corner where you are, someone far from harbor you may bring across the bar, something like that. That's what created me. And all this head trip, you know, is only a justification for what happened when I was singing those hymns. I come to the garden alone, well ado, so forth. Now, in 1 Corinthians 12, begin 12, you all have heard this thousands of times probably. For as the body is one, and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And so forth. Ear and so forth. You all know this passage. The question is whether we believe it. You see, the question is, and then I go back to 1 John, where Christ is the very structure of creation. And this body of Christ, therefore, points to the structure of our lives. We are parts of each other. We do suffer in a very deep, psychic, unconscious way. When anything dies, we die. When anything rejoices, we rejoice. Now, that is so antithetical to the way we live and the way we organize our existence and the way our churches function, for the most part. In other words, what I'm saying is, this says to us that we, though one, are many. And I think of the mobiles. You know, if you have a mobile up here, there used to be one somewhere around here, and you cut one string of a mobile, what happens? And that's the way life is. And in some way or other, when one person is snipped, not permitted to participate, not permitted to actualize his or her being, we die. And likewise, when any one individual very hard to think of this when you're thinking of comparing your kids with others. And I said to Sarah the other day, you're comparing Paul to all the other babies around here. I mean, that is just so sinful. I mean, it's not sinful in and of itself. It represents sin. I don't believe in sins. There is sin. We are so separated from other people that we begin to hold up our own kids and their triumphs. And we wonder if somebody else's kids triumphed. You know, we don't have the same feeling that somehow it's our triumph. They're our kids. All the kids are ours. And that's one of the great things that happens if you're up here for a couple of months. Pretty soon all the kids become your kids. And it's just great. Now, that is what Paul is talking about. In the body of Christ, and what I've tried to say by reference to the prologue to 1 John, that's the way it is in reality. It's not simply in the church. What we're talking about in the church, the second person is also the person or the being that's in creation. So it's not simply a matter of the church. The church is just kind of a model. Actually, the church is separated to be the church only because reality is so difficult in terms of bringing the reality. But in God's intention, the whole world will be like he's talking about the church being, which means we are parts of each other, and we can't get along without each other, and what happens to one happens to the other. Now, the other thing I've been saying is, sounds like I'm preaching today instead of kind of talking to you. The other thing I've been trying to say is that we have become abstract technical functions. And I frequently said in church that a little bit of me gets related to a little bit of you, maybe, if I'm lucky. But mostly, we have a coffee hour after church, and most of the time I'm busy running around from one person to the next one. I say it's like the preacher who's shaking hands as you go out, and while he shakes your hand, he's got his eye on the next person, remembering the name of the next person, so it can be very personal. But that's what we are. I mean, we're kind of abstract functions for each other. And what I say is, we need to be concrete presences for each other. And that means that you can't be present for everybody or you're present for nobody. And I think mostly, and one of the things that really bothers me about Holden is trying to be present for you, and then you're here for a day or two, and then present for somebody else, and by the you've been here a month or two, you just kind of withdraw and say, I can't be present really, personally. There's no way to be, and you kind of withdraw. And in a way, that's frequently what happens in life, I think. And so the question is whether you become, and again, it's not, you know, it's not completely one way or the other, because as I've said, when I have somebody operate on me, I want him to be a very highly technically trained abstract function. But it can be just an abstract function. I had a little something on my chest, and I went in to see a specialist, happened to be the head of the dermatology department, and he looked at it and he said, well, you got cancer, come in on Monday. That's what he said. So I recoiled a little, and after a while I said, well, what are you telling me? I mean, what is this? Oh, he said, don't worry about it. We'll take it off. It'll be okay. You know, he treated me as if, you know, I had a problem. He had a technical function, and that's all. That's all, you know, and he'd perform his thing. So he was operating on me, and I wanted to see it. He said, oh, no, we found it doesn't work if you know too much about what's going on and learn about this. We just take it off and you go. I mean, he didn't quite say it that way. But I was just a little function for him, you know. Now, we know enough about medicine to know that this abstract technical functions, the doctors, differ, and they make a lot of mistakes, and they're trying hard, I know now, to bring us into it and treat us as kind of whole persons with emotions and anxieties and all the rest of it. But I think a lot of the time they do it. Now, how can they be concerned with us when they operate on a schedule like this? Again, it's very ambiguous. Well, what I wanted to do today was to talk a little about the principles on the basis of which we are organizing our community, which attempts to move within the context of the church toward a concept The agency of God is over against our own agency. The many is over against the one. And the concrete whole person is over against the abstract technical function. In other words, we're trying to create a little bit of reality in which those principles are embodied on the thesis that our whole society somehow has to move in that direction. We don't know exactly what it means, but that if our society continues to be operated on the basis of the I, the one, and the abstract technical function, that it will slowly disintegrate, destroy itself, we'll have more crime, more mental ill health, more wars, more rumors of wars, and more everything. Now, I'm not saying that there's any way to overcome all of these problems. I'm not that naive. I'm only saying that there needs to be a movement in the direction that some of these problems are not created by our human situation generally, but they're created by the culture which we have created. They're created by the idols which we have allowed to inform us. What I'm going to do then is simply share with you a little some of the things that some of the people in our community have written. We had a series of seven sessions dealing with what we call a seven kind of concerns or realities out of which the community is beginning to shape itself or be shaped. It's very hard not to use the language of shape itself, control itself, create itself as over against be shaped. And these seven are, first, the image of the body of Christ as the kind of a fundamental conception out of which we're trying to be an inclusive community in terms of race, class, sex, and nationality, to be free for expressive activity, and there's no order in these things, it happened to be the way people could lead, to be a caring community, caring for each other and for nature, to be a community that really is rooted in the spirit, that is in faith, and to be a community for the sake of the world, and to be a community that continually attends to what its calling is in our time. In other words, to do the kind of thing I've been trying to do and look at the world and not simply go on through history doing what has been done, but to kind of make an assessment of where we are as a culture, as a nation, and to respond in a meaningful way to that. This paper was written by Roy Smith, one of the members of our community. He writes, "The covenantal community as the body of Christ is what the Christian community is called to be. In many ways, we're not attempting to be anything other than what the church should be, but we're kind of gathering ourselves together in the context of the church in order to be faithful and to be a kind of leaven in the church. As covenantal, we heretofore simply a group of individuals become a people, a unified whole, who covenants with God. We marry God. As Christians, our covenant is to be the body of Christ. One does not covenant with oneself. One makes a covenant with another person. As the body of Christ, we as a community do not covenant with ourselves, though we make individual covenants with each other in the group. We covenant with God, the Thou who created us, who drew us into unity, and upon whom our meaning rests. The immanence transcendence paradox dwells here. As covenantal community, the body of Christ, we find imminent, present in our life, at the depths, Christ, Emmanuel, God with us. But the life of Christ is lived in response to the other. God is transcendent. Our meaning, our unity as the body of Christ, thus always occurs in response to a center other than ourselves and our group interrelatedness. We are the response to the call of God. That call, what we as the body of Christ are covenanted to do, is to love God and the neighbor. Here again the immanence-transcendence paradox emerges. We become the body of Christ in loving the other. We become as individuals and community who do most essentially and divinely, We become as individuals and community who we most essentially and divinely are in giving ourselves to the other. We find God with us in loving God as other. We find ourselves as individuals and community in loving the neighbor, both in and out of community. The modern age desperately needs the covenantal community. Psychologically, this person is deeply involved in counseling. Psychologically, the illness of the time is narcissism, the contradictory and illusory love of self. Philip Reeve talks about it as a therapeutic way of life. The contradictory and illusory love of self. Contradictory and illusory because in turning one's energies in on oneself, one shatters into conflicting pieces and ends with no self at all. There is thus no real love of self in narcissism. There is a parallel social form of narcissism, sometimes called idolatry, in which a specified group or a specific group holds itself for its own value to be its own final purpose, holds its meaning to come only from itself, its worship to be only of symbols of itself. In idolatry, one group recognizes only its own right to be, and humankind becomes a meaningless and discordant abstraction. In idolatry, humankind recognizes meaning only as immanent in itself. The environment becomes meaningless, only useful and therefore destroyable. The outcome of psychological narcissism is despair, emptiness, schizophrenia, special student of schizophrenia, suicide. The outcome of social narcissism is analogous, the shattering of the social unity into conflicting groups, each of which senses in itself an emptiness, a futility, a despair, a terror of annihilation. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Our community will heal then to the extent that it is truly covenantal, that it is truly the body of Christ, that it does not take itself as its own end, that it does not worship itself as its own meaning, that it recognizes its immanent meaning to be a response to what transcends it. With one we individually love, we find ourselves, most able to share and be in loving that other person, the lover or friend, the thou, while always other stands closer to who we are when we are just ourselves. So it is with God in the covenantal community. Well, there's a lot of language in this, a lot of words. The first principle is, or one of the principles is, that we seek to be the body of Christ, and that we use that image as the image for our being together, which means that we have this transcendent relationship with God and the horizontal relationship with each other, and one without the other, Roy thinks, and many of us think, will not go. But if you take the image of the body of Christ in 1 Corinthians, then that image means that in the presence for each other, we become a caring community. And I just read you a little from, if I can find it, the caring community. This kind of summary of what it means to be a caring community. The covenantal community will be a community that cares and conserves the gifts of nature, so that the community will be a community that seeks to use less, which seeks to eat grains and not meats, so that we can use our land to do other things or feed other people or even create energy. If we use the land that we now use to feed beef and pigs for growing grains, we could get the same protein with 100 million less acres. On that 100 million acres, you could grow crops that could be turned into energy, which produce 15 Q of energy, which is 20% of the energy we now use in our whole society. And that energy then, if we had that amount of energy and it turned into alcohol and we drove our cars with alcohol, we could cut down the consumption of gasoline and change our whole lifestyle in relationship to the Arabs and not import any oil at all and not have to pay $45 billion a year with its effect on the dollar and the whole society. So that the principle or the principles on which we are building our community are not kind of just abstract things about caring, but they are related to some fundamental analyses of the meaning of this kind of care for nature and resources. So that we're going to focus on using less, less expensive services. We hope to include in the community and develop in the community people who can do almost all the things we need, television repair and all the rest of the things. And so we won't be dependent upon them. We hope to have a room where for the 20 families we will have tools, and instead of all the families having tools, and where the kinds of things that are somehow necessary for us will be provided in the community, so that everybody won't have to have everything. And we can provide services for each other, where we can simplify our lifestyles, and where that simplified lifestyle will be more possible because we have a community which is simplifying its lifestyle. And so I suppose we're going to be justified by having a simple lifestyle, which is always a problem. But at least I remember sending my children to a Quaker work camp simply so they'd be with some other kids whose style of life was more or less like ours. And they wouldn't feel so out of things. And partly our style of life was one which didn't acquire much in the way of things because we didn't have the money. Partly it was by choice. In other words, we'll have a caring community, and the care will be for nature. It'll also be for each other. So that, for example, we hope that Paul will have a lot of aunts and uncles and grandmothers and grandfathers like he does up here in our community. So that we will have what you'd call an extended family within this community. As one girl said the other day when we went out to meet another girl who was coming from dealing with that Kansas City tornado that took the lives of people, and she lost people who were so dear to her. She said, "I wish somebody would meet me at the airport." Well, if we have this caring community, we will meet each other at the airport and do some of those things which will offset the kind of isolation and the kind of atomization that characterizes our life. Now, of course, you have to have people who have that kind of freedom. And so that means that the community will try to sponsor a kind of withdrawal on the part of some of its members, or setting aside some of its members for that kind of care. Because, as I was saying to Maynard this morning, when I was in my great drive to become a professional success, my daughter was lost one day when she was at the library, the Blackstone Library, and she was supposed to come to AMP where we were shopping. She got lost, couldn't find her for 2 hours. An elderly black woman was walking the street with her in the wrong direction, but she walked the street with her. And I tried to give her some money, you know, for walking the street. And I said to myself, I don't have 2 hours to walk the street with anybody's kid. I don't know how you get that kind of freedom. I never had any freedom, really, psychologically. I may have some freedom physically, but I never had any freedom psychologically to attend to my other children. I have that time now simply to be free to attend to Paul with joy. I don't know how you get that kind of freedom. I don't know how that becomes important, because it is somewhat ambiguous. If you attend to one thing, you won't attend to others. But that kind of caring community, where very concrete personal relatedness is developed, it's over against just being abstract functions, is a part of what we think the community should be. Well, I might go on to talk about the other one. Very, very interesting paper on freedom for expressive activity that one of our gals wrote. And she came out of Jürgen Moltmann, The Theology of Play, and very heavily influenced by the notion that most of our play is a response to the unhappiness or the strains and stresses and meaninglessness of our daily work, as over against being just a kind of joyful, spontaneous play like children have. Well, that's probably enough to suggest to you, and I just learned, not from my own community, it's funny, but from one of the gals who left our community, wrote to Sarah, that we do have our option now on the building, 20 apartment building, so we have got the focus to begin to bring our families together. We've got to do some rehab and do some stuff in this building. It's going to be a long, very concrete, you know, down-to-earth process. No great highs for a long time until we do the very concrete stuff of getting the physical possibility of bringing people together. Now, some people have been able to establish these networks without living in proximity. I have a feeling that in the busy city, we've got to live in real proximity and eventually get some other living spaces and develop a community in this neighborhood with more buildings and more possibilities. I don't think 20 apartments is probably big enough to do all the things. You know, we want to have our own folk dance, square dance group. In other words, we want to do all these things with each other instead of, like now, we go to a square dance group and we never see the people any time other than that. One family on a block we see maybe for a couple of minutes every once in a while we walk around the block. But other people are just folk dancers. It doesn't build any interrelatedness because we folk dance, then we feel closer, and then we begin to talk to each other and become a part of each other. You know, that whole building of whole persons relating to each other is what we are about. And not with any imperiousness in saying that there aren't some things that you'll go out of the community to do, you go out to work. We also hope to have some industry. I hope to have some industry, some economic activity, where you can earn a living the way you want to get some people to devote their industry to filling the needs. You know, it's kind of incestuous. It's like the early groups that came to this country did. They had their own industry, their own churches and everything. It's kind of moving back into that notion of some real life together fashion, our own educational institutions, maybe not necessary, own health services, maybe not necessary. You know, I think we've got a pretty good health service in our place, but some churches are beginning to have holistic health centers where the whole concept of health is different, where you develop a relationship with a health-serving unit which can kind of feed you into the technical system and protect you from the technical system about which you know nothing and are just taken over when you get into it. It's a way of moving, you see. And I think, then, that given my analysis of the cultural situation, I have no alternative but to try to nurture a church which will respond to the total cultural situation with a kind of partial oasis of a different culture, so it's an alternative culture. It's a withdrawal and then an alternative culture, which slowly, over 100 or 200 years, may be the basis for the future. The least our people will be aware when the great crises, which I predict in our culture, come, they'll be aware of why they're coming and they'll accept them as gifts and not as tragedies. I look at the awareness now that we don't have all the resources in the world that everybody can use the way we do is a kind of gift, because it's going to cause us to raise questions. In other words, it's God speaking to us through the limits of the creation to say, stop, think about what you're doing, rethink your whole life, and maybe take a somewhat different direction. Maybe not, but maybe. So,
Al, could you read the other four, just the titles of the other four principles? You said there were seven.
Yeah. I'll just review them all. The first is the body of Christ. The second is an inclusive community, so that one comes out of not a kind of class, racist slice of reality and being, but one comes out of some other reality. Very hard. We've got some black people in our church. It was very interesting. One black person said, when we were talking about this, we said, you know, I grew up in a large family. Meals were holy times. We were all there. And I've seen that. I walked into a black home the other day, and there were three or four generations sitting around having a kind of clan conference on what they were going to be and do. It was just amazing. The whole dining room was just, you know, literally there were 25 people there. I think about how we make our decision. Well, he said, it's holy time. I live in this little apartment. He said, I don't know anybody who moves in or out. They could move in or out, and I could care less in a way, and we're just isolated. He said, I want to return to a holy kind of way. So that's why did I say that? I don't know why I said that, but at any rate, inclusive. So we get coming out of different realities, and that's why some aren't. I mean, some people simply say they can't absorb a different class. Some of our religious educators said they couldn't absorb people who have different cultural backgrounds the other day. I just shuddered for the body of Christ to say it has to be class-centered. At any rate, we're on the edge of a very liberal, very conservative mixture, very traditional people who are sold out to American culture and are all mostly white, but they're professional black people, and they've sold out more than the white people if they have made it. And then a very chaotic, you know, Woodlawn. So we're right on the edge, right between, and so we're just going to have to deal with our backyard. And that'll be a great gift, because it'll deal with reality of unemployment and all those kinds of issues. We have to deal with them, and now you can avoid them. So it's that inclusiveness. It's the being which somehow is inclusive, and not just in your mind. You got to deal with it daily as you walk out the door. Then freedom for expressive activity, what I call the dance, woodwork, cooking, painting, weaving, potting, singing, playing, and so forth, drama, poetry, like we have it here. We want to have that in the community. I mean, we just want to have that available within our community without having to go out to all kinds of professional performances, although there may be, you know, some people certainly do that. It's not, again, it's just to have it present, a caring community, then spiritually rooted, that is, where this vertical dimension, so that it's not just a community that comes together because there are felt needs. It comes together because it feels called by its deepest experience of the Christian faith, and it will be Christian, and the community for the sake of the world. My own idea is to have everybody with attending to some problem. You know, everybody actually, I say, should have a nation. South Africa, Chile, China, Tanzania, every kind of nation attending, and everybody have a kind of area of the world to which he or she, and I hope that we can start this out with, you know, with 5-6-year-olds, just by virtue of what they read and how you read to them and what you expose them to, that you get this kind of attention And then the last is to continually reflect on the meaning of this in terms of our time. That is, to be involved in an interpretive, reflective task of seeing the meaning of all of this in the larger context of God's action in our present world. That's a lot, you know. It's just overwhelming to think about trying to get a community that really is involved in that. But it's a dream. I think we're called that direction. I've overwhelmed you, I guess. Now, some of you undoubtedly are involved in some of this already. Last year I was talking to Sway, and a girl came up and said, "We've got it." And I went to see the campus church. As I've said to some of you, campus church, it's got 80 people involved in its fish industry. It's got 500 people involved in its adult education. It's got four houses in which people live now, and it's building townhouses for its people. And, you know, the church is attending to the people, and it's kind of countercultural. I'm not sure it's for the sake of the world as much, but it's an interesting embodiment. I find the charismatics and the evangelicals are moving toward this in terms of their own people. I find the question of whether they're moving for the sake of the world, but if you read Sojourner's Magazine, you get the evangelicals then moving in this direction for the sake of the world. Very interesting movement. And the great mainline churches and the great representations of Christianity looking down their noses at the charismatics and the evangelicals for the most part continue their kind of religion as an abstract function, a couple hours a week, or at best meetings for kind of administrative things during the week. And that's a caricature. You know, everything I say is a caricature, because there's always more and deeper movements everywhere than the caricatures indicate. And I emphasize it only for the sake of clarifying or pushing us into thought. Again, maybe the mainline churches are the wave of the future, and the main thrust of the churches are the wave of the future. It's an interpretation. It's an interpretation. It's clear. And there are just four or five different interpretations of where we are and the meaning of where we ought to be and the direction we ought to go. I have a very radical, countercultural, alternative cultural interpretation, which most of the people in my professional life in the Divinity School do not share.
How did you go about finding people who share that dream, that consciousness?
How did I go about? Well, I picked out a church, I guess, where there were some people that I thought were possible, where the minister had this kind of a openness. He could afford to go to England for 6 months and leave me doing this, and that's takes a lot of courage. A lot of courage. There was two other ministers who carried on the life of the church, so I didn't have to do all that, or I never could have done this. But how do you find them? You know, I can take individuals. This Roy is a student of mine, and we just talked in class and talked out of class, began to come to church, and then I asked him to help lead a discussion on Elizabeth O'Connor's The New Community, and we had some discussions in the church Sunday morning by adult class on that. And then one guy's daughter used to dance, still does, I guess, in our dance choir, or dance, what do you call it, dance group for the church, liturgical dance group. And so he came once, and somehow there was an announcement, so he started coming, former teacher of religion and literature at Yale Divinity School. And another guy came because I talked to a banker, and the banker referred him to me. You know, no publicity, nothing in a way, just being present. That's all we have done. We just kind of got together. And so then the minister's wife and I preached a sermon. The minister's wife live in a little collective. It's not a church collective. And I had courage enough recently to say, and someday, Harvey, you and May will probably move in with us. But so we preached the sermon. We had a group meeting afterwards. We talked just about like this, like we are here a little, not quite so highfalutin, because I tend, in those circumstances, to be a little lower key, I think. But we talked that way, and one teacher in the divinity school had heard me expound this way at a luncheon in the divinity school, and he responded, and then he and his wife began to come to the group, and he was teaching a class in our church, but unrelated to the church. Another gal came off the street, she was walking her dogs, she somehow got into this class on the new community. She joined the church, some people out of the church, one couple in the church, just pillars of responsibility, always available to do all the tasks, the dirty tasks of the church and everything like that. And the last session he said, well, I always thought that this had to be a secular job to somehow create the New Jerusalem. And he's just so thrilled the fact that the church is doing, he's been in a cooperative living situation for 30 years, but it's just been for living. There hasn't been any deep meaning strains in it except the function of providing decent housing. And he's just so thrilled. They're the family when we needed $10,000 for kind of upfront money that came and wrote the check the night we asked for the money for $2,000. We needed $10,000. And they had anticipated, and they, I don't know where they come from. Some come reluctantly because they think they ought to, and so there are a number of people in the church who respond to this. It's we've had a lot of house churches and a lot of confrontation, a lot of interrelatedness of persons, but it hasn't moved much beyond what I call the interpersonal level. And this is an attempting to move into housing and eventually all the other functions. I don't think the community is aware of my concerns for some of the other functions, although I've said it. I think they still are pretty much aware that this kind of deepening interpersonal relatedness can occur in this kind of a situation. And some would oppose the intercultural, and I don't know what they will, how they will take to the development. And so we just keep talking, and we meet every 2 weeks for a potluck supper, and for a while we were talking like this, and then we began to share our life stories, just tell our life stories and what we were about. And then we got into the period where we had to deal with this building, and we bid on another building actually, and I will forget the meeting when we bid on that building, and the minister, one of our ministers said, well, I won't move there. It was at 47th and Greenwood on the other side of the university community near another ghetto. Right in, the backyard of that housing was probably 75 black kids playing. And so she said, I can't move except in the Ray School District or the Bret Hart District. And another person said, well, I'd really like to know who's going to be in and whether I'm going to like them or not. She didn't say whether I'm going to like them, but in private conversation, she wanted to know that. And others thought it was too far. Others felt it was just too dangerous a neighborhood. And so it went on. And so I said to Sarah afterwards, well, I think I ought to resign. There's a little bit more personal reason for it. But then the next morning I went to the church and I sat down and made a list of people who might move in. And people came in during the day. We got a very a lot of activity going on. We began to talk, and so by the end of the day, it wasn't a great group decision. It wasn't a great consensus. By the end of the day, somehow we'd made a decision to go after that building. It's nip and tuck. It's up and down. It's a little bit of hope and despair. And as I say, we have so many if and butters. There are seven people, I think, who are really kind of committed to the notion that this is where the church ought to move, or try to move, or think about moving, or consider moving now. And so they're with it. And some of them are with it for the covenantal community and not the living. We had a great debate as to whether we ought to talk about the living situation in our covenantal meetings, or some think we're irreligious, that not irreligious, but we don't stress the spiritual enough. We're too involved in this concrete stuff, you know, and too down to earth, too secular, too, and that we ought to spend more time. And one guy, Roy, actually started a agape meal. I think there were only two or three came. But if we had that agape meal, I think in the context, it was a meditation period and then agape meal. I think if we had that in the context of our living unit, we would have a lot of people. Some people would come. In other words, we'd have all kinds of opportunities for deepening and broadening our faith and our response if we had the situation where that was occurring every day, every evening things were occurring. It'd be like up here. You'd have too many things to go to, but you'd have a rich smorgasbord, and the great growth would occur, and our kids would be participating in it. Well, it's time to get our coffee, I guess, officially.